If Bob didn't say it, then it probably ain't true. This is Primetime Sports with a man who cannot tell a lie. Bob McCown. Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour number three of Primetime Sports for this Wednesday, the 17th of December, 2014. Bob McCown along with Ken Reed in our Toronto studios. A little later, Emily Kaplan will join us from Monday Morning Quarterback. Canadian Danny Watkins, a late bloomer and potential diamond in the rough for the Philadelphia Eagles, didn't quite turn out to be what was expected. We'll talk about that a little later on. A very interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
The question around these parts... Are these Toronto Maple Leafs for real? And I guess that's the essence of the question. And what is really intriguing to me after four decades of following this team from a media perspective is I've never seen the public, the Leaf fans, so quiet with a string like this. And you can even go back to last year in the time leading up to the Olympics. The Maple Leafs went on an 11-2-1 run and wound up missing the playoffs.
Yes, out of the playoffs.
So that, I'm sure, has a great deal to do with it, not to mention a decade of relative futility in the city of Toronto, not to mention nearly five decades without a Stanley Cup. But are they real? Is this sustainable? Not winning 90% of your games. But this is a team that's, what, 2 points out of first place in their division?
They're grooving. They're in the wild card spot right now. But, they could
run. And they're up by a bunch in terms of the wild card.
Oh, they're safe. They're safe.
Well, yeah. I'm sure they weren't that far, that much different a year ago at this time. Jim Houston of the NHL and Sportsnet joins us. Hello, Jimmy. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. I think you answered the question that you asked. When you wondered if they were for real and talked about whether or not people were accepting and believing in them, the fan base is, every time they've jumped out of their seats to cheer for this team, they've been kicked in the teeth. So in recent years, so I understand the reluctance to stand up and cheer, but it started to change. Did you see the ovation they got last night at the
end
of the game?
I know.
Which that's the first time because usually people are gone. But those who stayed, and a lot of them did last night, were really enthusiastic about the team. And there's a lot to be enthusiastic about, in my opinion.
So you've seen a lot of their games. What's the fundamental difference between, if there is a difference, between this year's team at this point in the season and the team that, granted, a little later on in the season, had a run that was almost identical to this?
Depth. Forward depth. So let me answer the question by asking a question. Can you remember the last time anyone other than Phil Kessel led the Leafs in scoring and who it was?
No.
Jason Blake. Remember him?
Sure.
2009. And so I was thinking about that, and I think Kessel's probably still going to lead the team in scoring, but I guess when I was asking myself that question, what I was getting at and what I was asking was, when is the last time the Leafs had a line, other than a line that Phil Kessel was on, that was the best line on their team? When did they rely on anybody else in recent years other than they've got Bozak, Van Riemsdyk, and Kessel together now? There were a couple of different iterations of that line. But when's the last time they relied on anyone else to help them offensively and to do anything?
Well, it was before Kessel got there.
Back into the mid-2000s.
Certainly before Kessel arrived. That much
Absolutely.
We know.
And then they were in complete disarray in a couple of years just before Kessel came over. You remember the last years of they were a one-line team when Matt Sundin was leading them in scoring for the last few years.
Right.
When he played with Antropov and, as Don would call him, Panikahuski or whatever he is. So those three led them in scoring. But even then, they didn't have – I don't remember them having a quality second line or a third line. They had – you know, they'd have spurts in different times when a coach could put together a group that would give them a couple of weeks in that regard. And maybe that's what's going to happen here, too, when they get out on the road. But to see what they've got going with Kadri and a good defensive player like Daniel Winnick and Mike Santarelli and the emergence and the ascension up the lineup of Peter Holland – that gives them another center. So the problem used to be that you could have a guy like Joffrey Lupul on the team, but you didn't know who to play him with because you couldn't play him with Tyler Bozak because Kessel had to play there and Van Riemsdyk had to play there, but there was nobody else. It was a black hole down the middle. And now Adams getting better, and Holland has really come on, so you've got a place to play some depth players and spread some offense around without losing because there's nobody to play with. And a fourth line that doesn't get you much but doesn't give up much. So that's the long answer to your short question. What's the difference? They have some depth at forward.
Jim, who do you give credit to here? Do you give it to the players? Do you give it to the coach? Do you give it to management?
A little bit to everybody. Dave Nonis had to bring the guys in, and he made some pretty good moves. Leo Komarov hasn't played, but he's a real spark plug when he's in the lineup, and they have some cool decisions to make when he's ready to play because, you know, there's going to be a decent player that's got to come out, and that never used to be the case. Mm-hmm. He brought in Daniel Winnick. He made some moves to get them right-handed defensemen that have experience in Robida and Polak, who's almost ready to come back. So Nonis gets some credit there. Carlisle held it together when things were falling apart. And, you know, it looked like he looked like he was on an island unto himself early in the season. They took away his assistant coaches. They changed those. You could see what upper management was doing, and they were making all the moves, but it wasn't necessarily the coach that was doing that or wanted that to happen. And he persevered through that, and then when they looked like they were going right in the tank about a few weeks ago, he held them together. And the players sort of did the same thing. It looked like they were going to go south. So I think there's a little credit for everyone here, but probably when they start – when everything starts to come together, there's nothing like winning to get guys to play as a team. And they didn't play as a team. Now they look like, even though they still don't defend very well, mm-hmm. they can play a team game.
And you know what? It's funny about, you know, how they're coming together as a team. The product that they're playing appears to be a fun product to play. I mean, this team's averaging more goals per game than any team in the league, and everybody loves to score. Everyone loves to play offense.
Everybody loves to watch it.
Yeah.
They're a fun team to watch.
They are.
Because there's chances at both ends. You're never really sure if they're safe with a lead. And you're never really sure that they're out of a game because they can score in bunches. And that's where that's where the depth comes mm-hmm. in. You know that they in the last 2 years, they have only three wins when Kessel, Bozak, and Van Riemsdyk are pointless in the same night. Just three. And that's probably they're getting points right now, so they're contributing, but they aren't the biggest contributors right now. And so you can get by a night when they don't score, and that wasn't happening for long periods of time. If you could, especially out on the road, and that's why it'll be really interesting to see what happens with all these road games coming up, because everything changes when you're out on the road. All the matchups change, and you can get away with a one-line team at home because you can find your matchup. Mm-hmm. On the road, you can't. And so you got to have somebody else coming on a night when Kessel's shut down. Then you got to have a game from Kadri's line or Peter Holland's line. And I'll be really interested to see if they can sustain this. I don't think they can sustain this winning percentage out on this road trip because there are just, you know, there's fatigue. There's so many things that go into it. But I think they're better prepared to at least hold their own.
I was going to ask you, Jim, starting December 21st at Chicago at 16 of 20 on the road, and you mentioned they're a pretty team to watch, and they are a pretty team to watch. Are they going to have to change the way they play when they hit the road, play a little ugly?
I'm not sure that can they do that. I'm mm-hmm. not sure that they know.
I don't know if they can.
Well, that's just it. If they could do that, I kind of think they might have tried it by now mm-hmm. to try and play a shutdown game. They've got to play a little better defensively. I think they've got to, you know, maybe have a little better back check, maybe just be a little more responsible defensively. But their goaltending looks like it's good enough now. And their defense is not as bad, and it's not as much maligned as it has been in the past. Their forwards are going to have to give them a little bit of a hand on the road. But they can score, so they just need to be a little bit better defensively, and they can score enough to beat anybody.
With Jim Houston of the NHL on Sportsnet. Okay, time for the Primetime Sports quiz. Your chance to win a cheese straightener. if you can correctly answer this question. Are you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
Since the 2011-12 season, only two players in the NHL have 100-plus goals and 100-plus assists. Name them.
Sidney Crosby.
And?
100 and 100. Who is the other one? I'm beside myself trying to think. If it's not Ovechkin because he doesn't have enough assists.
Did we mention his name? Did Jim mention his name earlier?
He's going to hurt himself here.
Yeah. Kessel?
Yeah, I think it must be Kessel, isn't it?
The correct answer is Phil Kessel and...
Tyler Seguin?
Tyler Seguin.
Ahead of them all. I wasn't sure that going back that far that Seguin had that much in 11 and 12. I know the last 2 years he's been spectacular. They're an interesting team. I'm going to watch them in Vancouver tonight. And he is, boy, everybody knows where he's going on the power play. Everybody knows where he's going to shoot from on the ice if he gets the opportunity, but they can't.
Yeah.
Such a release. And that's interesting when you ask the question about those two, would you make the deals again? Would you make, if it's Maple Leafs, would you still make the Kessel deal?
Well, I think... You know, you're asking, if you ask a Toronto Maple Leaf fan that question in the midst of the run that they're on, I'm guessing they're going to say, sure, I would.
Yeah.
But what we all know is that when Burke made that deal that wound up being essentially Seguin for Kessel, there was nobody in the early days that thought that was a good deal. They thought he was a crazy man. No, I'm not going to sit here and tell you right now that I wouldn't scratch my chin if Dallas called and said, you know, well, do you want Seguin back for Kessel? Well, they never really had Seguin, but...
Right.
That'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I guess for me right now, the more interesting question is if you're the Boston Bruins, are you rethinking the deal? Even though they, on a regular basis, can have four players in their lineup, Riley Smith, Matt Fraser, Joe Morrow, and Louis Erickson, on any given night, four players for one or two, I guess. Peverly was in that deal as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, essentially it was a four-for-one deal. And given the difficulty that the Bruins have scoring right now, would they take Tyler Seguin back?
Mm.
Because they are incomplete on the right side.
Yes, they are.
And they can't score.
So let me go down a slightly different road here as we project. You also know that for several months now, although things have quieted the last little while, there was great speculation. And you mentioned Randy Carlyle and them stripping him of his assistant coaches. And essentially, we thought doing everything but fire Randy Carlyle to prepare for the arrival of Mike Babcock.
Right.
What does Carlyle have to do to keep his job? Where's the bar?
Right,
I know he's doing it right now.
But they got to get into the playoffs.
Is that the minimum?
Well, you know, it might depend on, first of all, they have to get into the playoffs. But if they were, you know, continued to play even close to as well as they have over the past few weeks and had a really good playoff position and, say, a favorable home ice advantage in a playoff round, then you probably look at that, well, they better win around it. They better get a little further than this. If they're playing this well in this conference, then they have to do this. But right now, I mean, on this date in the season with a road trip that could sink them coming up, I would say he's going the right direction if he just makes the playoffs.
Let's change gears a little bit. We haven't had a chance to talk, I don't think, since Aikens got fired in Edmonton. Was that an obvious move? Was that, should we have seen this one coming?
Yes, and I think that Craig McTavish did it reluctantly. I mean, he even said that. But the hand was finally forced, not because of the results, but what they looked like in getting those results or lack thereof. The building was quiet. It's easy to get a ticket in Edmonton, even if they are all sold. People are they're just not enjoying, weren't enjoying going to the games. And you could hear a pin drop while they were playing. And it looked like in the last game that he coached in the loss to the Rangers, 2-0, is as bad a hockey game as you'll see. And there was no atmosphere in the building. I think that finally forced his hand and that he had to do something. And I don't think there's one move he could make in terms of a trade or bringing somebody up or inserting somebody in the roster. There's not just one that would improve his team, unless there's a massive blockbuster deal that you just can't make. Mm-hmm. But there are too many holes, is my point. So the one move you can make is the coaching change. At least you satisfy the people that want something to happen. You get a closer look at your players, and you are better prepared to make some personnel decisions when you see firsthand how they're reacting to their coach and how they're reacting to the way they're being taught. Because it simply looked like, you know, if you took it on face value, you'd say Dallas Eakins is a lousy coach. Well, he wasn't teaching them to play the way they were playing. I can guarantee that. They were doing it. And he couldn't obviously get the message across or couldn't help them to play in a better fashion.
What did you think of Dallas's message, Jim, to the Edmonton fans to be patient? Because if I'm an Oilers fan, that's the last thing I want to hear, but maybe it's a thing I have to hear.
I think the truth hurts that they're still a long ways off. And, you know, it's been a few different things. They got those first-round picks, and they got the top-end guys, but they didn't get anybody to come with them.
Nobody.
And they haven't been able to fill with free agents. They haven't done as good a job as they probably should have in that regard. They haven't addressed the fact that they don't have a number one NHL goaltender. So there's a few things, and you have to be patient to pull those things together. I think his message is one that nobody wants to hear, but part of the reason you have to be patient is because things didn't go as well as they had hoped. The five-year plan is probably going on a little more than 5 years.
Yeah.
Dallas, for example, could say the same thing too, but they got results almost by accident last year, so the burden of expectation is on their shoulders when they're probably only in year two of what is a 4 to 5 year plan as well. And nobody wants to be patient about them now because they made the playoffs last year. And in Edmonton, nobody wants to be patient because it's been far too long, but there's ways to go. And I think there's some interesting twists and turns to come because even their top players aren't what they expected they would be.
So ultimately, they'll bring in their minor league coach.
Nelson.
Yeah, to take over, but on an interim basis, which means let's see how you do the rest of the season. If, in fact, he doesn't work out and this team continues to lose, which I would think most of us would expect to probably have happen, does your next full-time coach in Edmonton have to have some experience now? Do you have to go down that experience road?
Probably do. I think you might have to go to, if you're going to have a, I also think if you're going to have a really young team, you need a more experienced guy. It's like you need a more experienced teacher who's been through a little more and knows how to get you through some of those situations that you don't know how to get through.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought one of their mistakes was that they let Ralph Krueger go, because I thought he was sort of a fatherly teaching-like figure that seemed to be getting through to some young players. And even though he didn't have a vast amount of experience in the NHL, he had a vast amount of experience with young players,
right,
with coaching, and with a team that was inferior to most of the teams that it was playing all the time when he was in Switzerland. So I thought that was, but that's, you know, that's yesterday's news. So now I do think that they may have to go back to somebody like that, unless Todd Nelson works out. I mean, I hope he does for his sake. Everything I've heard about him is that he's a really good guy, that his teams really like playing for him, and he'd done a pretty good job with what is not a very deep minor league system in Edmonton and in the team down in OK City. So,
yeah.
But I think if you have to make that move, the next move is you need to go to somebody who can really teach and reinforce and has the credentials to make them listen.
So meanwhile, down the highway in Alberta, a few days after the Oilers make a change in their head coach, the Calgary Flames do what we thought they would do, and that is extend their coach. And they do it in the midst of, I guess, the worst skid that the Flames have had this season. Are you at all surprised by that or the timing of this? Let me start with that. No?
No, not at all. I think it was coming. I think they've been working on it for a little while. They had to wait for a little while because the general manager had to get to know the coach. The president, Brian Burke, knew the coach, and he watched him firsthand. But Treleving hadn't been around him, knew of him, and needed to have an association with him, needed to get to know him a little bit and watch him. And I think that accelerated the process, or the results that they got early in the season probably accelerated that process.
For sure.
Because Brad had a look at it and thought, this is pretty good. The guy's doing a lot better with a lot less than I thought he could. So, no, I'm not surprised that he said, I'm not surprised that they've fallen off a little bit. But this streak that they're on, they played some pretty good games there and lost. They were out on the road. So it's not like, you know, there will be people who are saying, oh, the wheels fell off that cart. You can see it coming. The wheels haven't come off entirely. They haven't fallen off really badly, like they're getting pounded all the time. They're still a pretty good team, and I think that they'll scrape it together. Maybe they were above where we thought they'd be, where they probably deserve to be, especially given
they've
got nobody at center ice with any experience, or didn't have for a long period of time. So that they are right around, they're out of the playoffs, 2 points out right now, and if they can hang in there and battle for one of the final couple of playoff spots, that in itself would be terrific for a team that most people had written off to be last in the conference.
Been on this show hanging out with you, Bob, for a little while now, and there's one team that we never talk about. And Jim, I want to get your thoughts on them because I just think they're
probably with good reason.
No, I think they're a fantastic team. I think they're a ton of fun to watch. They have one of the best young lines in the game. It's the St. Louis Blues, Jim. Do you think they're capable of doing anything at all in the West this year?
I think they are. I mean, I think they're as good as they've been the last couple of years when they got knocked out in the first round and had really, really tough play opponents. They had to play LA and Chicago in the last 2 years in the playoffs. And so not being able to get over that hill is, you can almost understand it because of who they had to play against. I still am not entirely convinced they've solved their goaltending problems. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Marty is the answer. I don't know if Jake Allen's still pretty young. Brian Elliott, I'm not sure there. I don't think they've got a good enough goaltender to beat Chicago, to beat Los Angeles, maybe to beat Anaheim. But they do seem to have the other parts. And, you know, if they don't get sick of Ken Hitchcock, then they can probably be a really good team. But Hitch has a fairly short shelf life.
Yeah.
And just because of the individual that he is and the coach that he is, guys get tired of him. And that hasn't happened yet. And they do have some really good young players, and they are fun to watch right now. But I'm still not sure if they're as good as the top teams in the Western Conference, and it starts with their goaltending.
Now, it's interesting you mentioned Hitch. And I think most people would say you're right, 100%. He's a short-term coach. And yet there have been
he's been around forever.
Yeah, but there have been short-term coaches that have been stubborn. Our late friend Burns was sort of that guy, in my opinion. This is what I am. This is what I do. This is the way I coach. Like it, lump it. I don't care. I talked to Hitch. We don't talk to him all the time, but he does come on the show regularly. And I had this conversation with him a couple of years ago. Not that long ago, since he's been there in St. Louis. And I said, you know, are you prepared to change so that you can last? Because clearly your resume is starting to look like, you know, an ink blotter test here. You know, it's like you're all over the map. And he said, I think I have changed and I'm conscious of changing. So I wonder if he is a different guy today. And, you know, you know yourself, Jimmy, you know, a coach can tell you he's actually different and go out and do the exact same thing that he's always done. So I don't pretend to know.
Or, Bob, he can change, and all guys can to a certain extent. And they can change for 50 games.
And then they fall back.
They can change until the pressure mounts.
Yeah, I get
you. Most often, they are the same guy they've always been.
You're right.
And so he's doing a really good job. I don't mean to disparage him that much, except that history tells us that guys get tired of playing for him for whatever reason it is, and some of his teams come apart because of that. And he is he's a different kind of cat in that regard, and he really puts the pressure on his players to play the right way, the way he believes is the right way, and they seem to be doing it right now. And he's certainly got the ear of guys like Jaden Schwartz and Tarasenko and Yuri Laterra, and they're just tearing it up right now.
Well,
I just have watched what's happened to their team the last couple of years. So they are from the show me state, and they got to show me.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Tarasenko, I can't picture him going on rushes like this and playing this style for the 1999 Dallas Stars, but Hitchcock's letting him go. And to me, that shows that he's willing to change there. Go ahead, kid. You got the skills. Go for it. But then again, the game's changed a lot since Dallas won in 1999.
Yeah, they were playing such a different game at that time. And in that regard, Hitch and everybody else who's coaching in this league has to change. Everything happens so fast in the game right now. There was such a gap between the forwards and the defense in those days, and he won with a team in Dallas that had one of the slowest third lines in the history of third lines. But they could, you'd get a whole bunch of veterans who wanted to stay in the league, and you could get them to play on your third and fourth line because all they had to do was completely throttle the other team's momentum. Mm-hmm. They just slow the game down. That doesn't happen now, boy. It's go, go, go. And his team is like that too. It's pressure. There's no gaps. But it's up and back. And even those guys who are allowed to go and score, when the puck turns over and goes back the other way, you better be coming back 100 miles an hour with back pressure so your defense can stand up, or you're not going to play.
Does the speed of the game make it tougher on a play-by-play guy, Jim?
No, because it's so fast that people at home wouldn't know if I was making a bunch of mistakes anyway.
Well played.
I'll tell you what it is. It's so different in our world because everything happens so fast and the game goes by so quickly that you got to stay on top of it. And you used to be able to have a sandwich in the middle of some of those games in the early 2000s. And while you watched somebody come through the neutral zone, and now everybody comes through the neutral zone at 100 miles an hour and the game just flies back and forth. And it's one of the reasons we don't see, I was noting this the other night, I was watching a game and I thought, I just watched a game that's really fast. Not an awful lot has happened, but it has been fast, and there's been about 8 minutes without a stop. And then when the whistle finally went, I thought, the other thing I haven't seen in 8 minutes of action is a body check.
Hmm.
Haven't seen a hit. And sometimes it's still a part of the game that happens, and it's fun to watch, and it really gets everybody into the game when it happens. But there are long periods of time in the game
right now
that it goes so fast that guys don't finish their checks. They make a turn because they've got to get back. Coaches don't want them to throw the big hit because it takes them out of the play and they can't put back pressure on. So they'll turn away and skate back.
Wow. Finish your hit. Not part of the lexicon anymore. I never thought I'd live to see that day.
Well, and the fights
you want them on the forecheck to finish, but there are times where you don't want your guy to go out of the way to finish his check because it takes him out of the play.
Yep.
And fights are becoming a rarity.
Yeah.
I've never wanted to eliminate the fighting. I just wanted it to be real.
Well, the Reeves and Bolton were going to go the other night in St. Louis. I'm jacked. They're standing off. They're ready to go. And the linesman just moved right in. I went wild.
But they both backed off, too.
Well, yeah, they were going to go. They were going to do a little dance, but there's no show me anymore, like you were saying, Jim.
Yeah, it's different.
There's sometimes, as much as people malign it, and there's people who don't want it to be part of the game, a good fight can not only change a game occasionally, but it can change the fortunes of your team. Mm-hmm. You know, it can pull it. You get a night where one guy on your team or two or three guys on your team stand up for somebody, stand up for a teammate, stand up for the guy who sits next to them in the locker room, and you have a series of events like that. It happens on the night, and I've seen it where it can take a slumping team and turn them the other direction.
Yeah, but what we had to go through was 10 other fights that were meaningless in order to get that one.
I'm not in favor of that at all.
And that's the problem.
I'll be the thug in the room. I like it.
Yeah, well.
But now there are other times now that where things go unnoticed where, a young player can get pounded and just mercilessly attacked physically by somebody in the other team and nobody does anything.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, you know, it's just the game just carries on.
Give a little, take a little.
You know where I see a difference is a team like Winnipeg, for example. Those guys are they body check, they play a hard physical game, they stand up for each other, and look where they are in the standings. Look what it's doing for them. So you know, I think that all those are intangibles as part of a team game. And some of them have gone by the wayside. There are teams that aren't very physical at all. There are teams that don't need to have any physical guys because nobody's going to, just nothing's going to happen. You want guys who are physical on a forecheck, but most teams don't have a tough guy now to go tap somebody on the shoulder and say, don't be hitting that young defenseman.
Yeah, and if you want to look at the other side of it, look at what happens to the Boston Bruins this year. They don't have those guys anymore. They're not as tough anymore. And look where they're at in the standings. So.
And they're trying desperately to find out who they are and get back to where they were. Maybe that'll happen as they steal Chara's back in the lineup and David Krejci's on his way back. But they've got a couple of holes in their lineup, and that's part of that is the cap system, and they paid the price of winning. But also, you almost know, when they made the Boychuk deal, I'm thinking the hockey gods will get you for that. Because in the game, and it's all sports, I think, when you do something that is against your better judgment, you usually pay for it. They didn't want to trade Johnny Boychuk. That's the last guy they wanted to be rid of on their team. He's a great glue guy, a big, tough, physical guy, the kind of guy that we were just talking about that can pull your team together. But they had to because of cap reasons, and he is the guy they picked, and it made eminent sense looking at their cap that they would trade him. But you almost knew that when Peter Chiarelli made a move that was probably against his better judgment, he'd pay for it. And wouldn't you know it, Chara gets hurt almost the next day. Yep. Torrey Krug gets hurt. There's other injuries. And they're just really struggling to be a team right now.
Jimmy, we got to get out of here. You've been here a long time. We thank you very much, as always. We'll talk to you next week, I hope.
Okay, see you later.
Jim Houston of the NHL on Sportsnet. Now, 28 minutes before the hour, Emily Kaplan of Monday Morning Quarterback joins us with an interesting story when we come back. This is Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan.
Let's go!
Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand.
Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
You got me running, going out of my mind. 20 before the hour. It's Primetime, Canada's most listened to sports talk show. McCowan Reed in our Toronto studios. Before we go into our next story, how about this? Jim Harbaugh turned down the University of Michigan when they offered him a chance to go and coach their football team.
Okay.
They made him another offer today.
Okay.
6 years, $48 million. Eight large a year to coach college football.
Well, if they pay the coaches that much, they surely must be paying the players a ton too, right?
No, they pay the players nothing.
Oh, okay.
So they're not allowed to because they are amateurs.
Oh, they're amateurs. Right.
The coaches are extremely professional.
That's very professional at that salary.
I'm sure the football... I'm sure if he doesn't go there, the University of Michigan will be happy to pay each of its football players like, $700,000 to $800,000 a year. How far would $48 million go?
Pretty far, I think. That'd do all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meal money.
Be okay.
Oh, wait, you can't buy them lunch either, can you?
No.
Okay.
Speaking of football, Danny Watkins is a name that probably almost nobody in this country hasn't heard of lately.
Hasn't heard of lately, yeah. It was big news a couple of years back.
Right. So why don't you take a second and tell us the raw story of Danny Watkins.
So a couple of years ago, Philadelphia Eagles drafted Danny Watkins out of Baylor. He's an offensive lineman. He was
Canadian
a late bloomer.
From Southern BC.
Out of BC. He was 26 years old when he was drafted. Didn't really get onto football until he was 22 years old when he went to college in California to study firefighter sciences, I think it was. He started volunteering at fire halls when he was 16 years old, always wanted to be a firefighter. 22, decides to go to take the course, shows up at school. This kid, wow, look at this kid. Has he ever played football? No, he's never played football. He's built for football. Goes out for the football team. Boom, he makes it. A couple years later, he gets a full scholarship to Baylor. He's a stud. He plays in the Senior Bowl. He wows everybody. The next thing you know, the next thing he knows, much to his surprise, he's a first-round pick in the NFL draft, and he's off to a life of riches in the NFL, except...
Let me stop you right there and bring our guest in, because she has written the story of Danny Watkins for Monday Morning Quarterback. Here's Emily Kaplan. Hi, Emily. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Excellent.
Great, thank you.
Pick it up, if you will, from where Kenny stopped. What happens next with Mr. Watkins?
Well, Mr. Watkins, you know, gets drafted by the Philadelphia Eagles, and it just doesn't quite work out. The public can kind of see it as, you know, what they did, but the Eagles had to drop him. You know, he wasn't performing.
Mm-hmm.
Spends a year toiling away in Miami as everything's going down with, you know, the Richie Incognito bullying and hazing scandal.
Right.
And then Danny decides that this is not what he wants to do, leaves a sport that paid him millions of dollars, and returns to be a firefighter.
And interestingly, in Texas, I made to understand, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, kind of not far from Baylor, where, you know, he spent a couple years down there.
How much of this is this young man walking away from the NFL, and how much of this is a young man who just wasn't interested in it and therefore wasn't succeeding?
Yeah, I think what attracted to me this story was that it's so nuanced and there's so many layers. And there's plenty of reasons why Danny Watkins is not an NFL football player this year. You definitely touched on both of them, and it's kind of hard to weigh which one is larger. I think the bottom line was that this is a kid who all he wanted to do is be a firefighter.
Yeah.
This is his dream. He got sidetracked with this dream. People told him he's really good at the sport, you know, football, and they can pay millions of dollars. And he thought he'd try it and go back to firefighting, and he just ends up choosing that path to return to that path sooner rather than later.
Did you get any sense from anybody you talked to that this kid really had the goods to be a, if not great, then at least very good lineman?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Howard Mudd, who was the offensive line coach with the Eagles while Danny was there, you know, one of the first people I talked to for the story, he's a veteran NFL coach, been with, you know, the Colts for all of those offensive lines that protected Peyton Manning.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when he talks about Danny Watkins, it's like you just hear this, it's like the sadness in his voice. And, you know, it's just, you know, here was this guy, you know, came to us with everything, and it just... whatever reason, Howard Mudd said it was his biggest failure as a coach, could not develop or pan out.
Emily, I thought that was one of the most intriguing parts about your story was here's Danny Watkins in this world of football, and he's surrounded by people that their whole lives only wanted to play football and make it to the NFL. And for the life of them, they just can't understand why this one guy doesn't want to be one of them. That's kind of what I got out of your story.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I completely agree. And kind of the way I thought was that we all saw Danny Watkins in the light we wanted to see Danny Watkins.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, what I wanted to go in is like, who is this guy? What is his motivations? And what really happened? I kind of got a sense of that. But at the same time, I mean, you can go into that Philadelphia locker room and talk to a lot of the players that you know he left behind, and they'll call him a con artist. You know, they still think he's phony and full of whatever. So it's just, like I said, it's just a totally nuanced and crazy layered story.
And the one part of your story, Emily, I mean, this guy was really obsessed with firefighting, and Philadelphia Eagles are pretty convinced that he was perhaps moonlighting with a fire hall in the Philadelphia area while he was playing for the Eagles.
Yeah, you know, this is kind of also what got me hooked onto the story was, you know, there were these rumors when he was in Philadelphia that he was fighting fires, and you know, Danny adamantly denies any of that. He says he wasn't, you know, he was really involved with the charity down there. He started All Hands Working, which is for firefighters, and he says, you know, it was kind of mistaken. But even as recently as this fall, there was photos that were released by a blog in Philadelphia that are pretty incriminating, and incriminating in the sense that it just, the evidence shows that here he is wearing this uniform looking like he's fighting a fire. So, as you can imagine, like you said, like people entrenched in football think that's the craziest thing. Why would a player, you know, risk everything to do that during the season?
You did talk to him, albeit relatively briefly. I gather he's not all that interested in, I guess, his own story. Is that how would you phrase it?
Yeah, yes and no. So, I went down to Texas, you know, to try to talk to him in person,
right,
and that didn't work out. I ended up talking to him on the phone, and really, why he's been so reclusive is that he feels that, you know, he's been villainized in the media, you know, especially in Philadelphia, you know, they paint this one picture of him and he's had enough. He just wants to have kind of normal life. And you completely understand why he'd be wary of a reporter. He and I actually, we exchanged a couple texts today, or even talked to a few people he knew, and he pretty much said, you know, I was reluctant to talk to any media, and you know why, but thank you for, he said, saying the truth and saying the story. I told him that all I wanted to do was kind of paint the fairest picture I could. And I guess what he walked away with was that this is the fair picture.
To me, it's one of those things where when a kid, say he's a great baseball player, but he doesn't want to play baseball and he's 12 years old and his dad's telling him to play baseball, but he doesn't want to play. Well, then dad kind of accepts it. But here a guy gets to the pros. And here he gets to the pros and he just doesn't want to play football. Shouldn't we as a society and as a bunch of, well, professional sports wannabes, a lot of us in the media business, just accept the fact that this guy'd rather be a firefighter, in the eyes of some, a far more noble profession than playing football?
Absolutely. And I mean, that's kind of the way I looked at it. But then on the flip side, you see where Philadelphia players, organization, and fantasy is that, yeah, that's fine and dandy if he doesn't want to play football, but don't sign a contract for millions of dollars and say you're going to play football if you're not 100% in. And that's kind of where, you know, when you hear the word, like, they call him a con artist, that's what they're implying.
Yeah, maybe. Then again, maybe not. It was a fascinating story, Emily. Thank you very much for taking a few minutes for us tonight. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye. Emily Kaplan, writer, reporter for Monday Morning Quarterback. Real interesting story.
It's a backward story.
It's the story that, you don't expect it. Here's a guy, not just makes it to the National Football League. I mean, really isn't a football player at all.
No.
Gets convinced to play football, winds up going to Baylor, winds up being a first-round draft choice.
Yeah.
I think he's a late first-round draft choice.
I think it was 23rd overall.
Yeah. And has the talent to not just be an NFL player, but a great NFL player by all accounts.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't care.
He didn't want to do it. I mean, if all your buddies encourage you to do something and you thought, I can make money doing it, like tons of money doing this, sure. And when he was in college playing, I'm sure part of the fun about it was he kind of got to hang out with the guys like you would at a fire hall. Almost.
Well, yeah, and I mean, he's an offensive lineman. How many offensive linemen play into their late 30s?
Not a lot.
So maybe you've got, if you're lucky, 8 years.
Yeah.
So you're 30, early 30s. Now, I know when you're in your 20s, looking at your 30s,
sure,
it's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get to your 40s, looking back, you go, why did I do that?
Yeah.
You know, so work at it, play for 8 years, and then go be a firefighter.
But
you still got 25 years to be a firefighter.
But that's what all of us say. That's not what he was saying. And to me,
bless him for that.
Yes, he followed his passion, so
yep,
go for it, Danny.
We got to get out of here. We'll be back tomorrow. Well, I'll be back tomorrow. Will you be back tomorrow?
I will.
Thanks to Jim Houston of the NHL on Sportsnet and Emily Kaplan of Monday Morning Quarterback for joining us on the program. Thank you for watching or listening. Have a nice evening. We'll see you tomorrow. Good night from Toronto.